The Marching Round Table is an official media partner of Drum Corps International.
This podcast is sponsored by Box 5 Software, creators of Envision 3D Drill Design Software, found at box5software.com.
If you don't get up in the morning and you can't wait to get to work, then you're picking the wrong profession. You know, find something that you cannot wait to do, that excites you, that you're passionate about, that your enthusiasm is just bubbling over, and then go do it. You know, I can't believe they pay me to do what I do.
That's W. Dale Warren, the highly respected educator and adjudicator who was a teacher who made the transition from teaching high school to working at the college level. On this podcast, he shares advice for anyone who might be considering this career track.
What do you want to do next year? What do you want to do in 5 years? What's your perfect gig in 10 years? Where do you want to be in 25 years? Where would you like to retire? You know, I got to get them thinking long term. And so you go get the degree that's going to allow you to do those things at the highest level of excellence, of success. So get the undergrad degree in the right thing for you for that next step in your life. Then after that next step, then go get the master's degree in the discipline that's going to make it better for you. If it's music ed, great. If it's conducting, great. If it's pedagogy, great, on and on. And then when you go get the doctorate, this is the job I want to finish my career in.
Ultimately, it's about doing a fantastic job all the time, no matter what your job or who you're working with. Dale Warren, on making the transition from teaching high school to working at the college level, on the Marching Roundtable. This podcast is brought to you by Envision 3D Drill Design Software, found at box5software.com. Envision 3D Drill Design Software is the only true 3D drill design software available for marching bands, winter guards, indoor percussion groups, and drum corps. If you write drill or design for marching music groups, Envision enables you to plan and execute shows that push the creative boundaries of your show designs. Download your free version at www.box5software.com and see for yourself. Hey everybody, welcome to the Marching Roundtable podcast. This is Tim Hinton. Thank you so much for listening. Very, very happy to be talking to W. Dale Warren. How are you, sir?
I am dandy fine. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for talking to me. I ran into you this past weekend in St. Pete at the FNBC contest. There you were, and I was thrilled to get to be in one of your famous selfies, because you are notorious for these. Are you famous? Don't you think you're famous for your selfies?
I think I'm infamous. I don't know about famous, but notorious is an excellent descriptor. We'll go with that one.
Very good. Well, it was wonderful to see you, and I was like, hey, we should do another podcast. So here we are. I appreciate you doing that so much. And we're going to talk about making the transition from high school director to working at the college level. So why don't we start by just sort of, in case people don't know, I think a lot of people know a lot about you, but why don't you just sort of say what your high school to college sort of career was?
I taught 6 years of public school in the state of Kentucky, which is my home state. I taught 2 years at a little bitty school named Bremen, which doesn't exist anymore. It now has evolved into Muhlenberg County High School. And then I taught 4 years at North Hardin High School in Radcliffe, Kentucky, which is a much larger high school. Of course, that school is still going quite strong. And then I transitioned from North Hardin to go to the University of Kentucky to be the associate director of bands and the director of athletic bands. And I was at Kentucky for 5 years, and then Arkansas headhunted me, and I've been here, I guess now, gosh, 26 and a half. I came in 1991, so, wow. You know, a long time.
That's fantastic. So did you always have the aspiration to want to be teaching at the college level?
Not at all. When I went to school, undergraduate school, let me be clear, not high school, but when I left high school, I actually was a computer science major. Guidance counselor told me I'm not going to make any money in music. My parents didn't want me to do that, et cetera, et cetera. So I went into computer science because that's what my counselor said the next frontier was. She was absolutely correct, obviously. But I did that 1 year of computer science major at Western Kentucky University, and I was miserable, and I missed music. still played in the band, and I played in the tuba, euphonium ensemble, and I sang in the choir, and I didn't divorce myself from music at all, but I didn't become a music major until my sophomore year, and I transferred schools to Austin Peay State University in Clarksville, Tennessee, because they had an outstanding music ed program, and my high school band director, Joe Allen, college band director, was a gentleman by the name of Edward Knobb, who had gone to the University of Michigan. He was teaching at Western Kentucky University, so Mr. Allen had Mr. Knobb come in every single year to work with the band. And so Mr. Knobb knew about me. He had gone to Austin Peay, and he invited me to come there to be a music major. So that, I know that was a long answer to a very simple question, but that's kind of the path.
Okay. So, but you were planning to be a high school director, correct?
World's greatest. That was my plan. I was going to be the world's greatest high school band director in the history of civilization. And I had no aspirations whatsoever about becoming a college conductor.
Okay, so I think it's going to be interesting to find out how that happened, because I think some people do have aspirations, but some people obviously just sort of end up there. So how did you end up there?
To make this answer not so complicated that your listeners will turn this off, I ended up in Kentucky. Let me back up to my public school teaching. In Kentucky, there was a law at that time that you had to have your master's degree after you couldn't teach more than 10 years without your master's degree. And so then after that, you get a rank one. But the point is, I was in my sixth year of public school teaching, and I took my top concert band to the state concert festival at the University of Kentucky. And we played Lancashire Posy. And Frank Wicks was one of the judges. And Frank, of course, was at LSU in those days. And Frank was impressed, or he was excited enough about the way we played that piece, which is kind of his piece, that he asked the contest host if he would ask me if I could go to dinner with him. So I did, and Frank asked me to come to LSU to be his graduate assistant and study conducting with him. And so I knew I had to get the master's anyway, and so I accepted that invitation. So I'm getting ready to finish the school year out at North Hardin. It's May, and the phone rings, and Harry Clark, who's the director of bands at University of Kentucky at that time, says, "Dale, Steve Moore is leaving UK to get his doctorate at Illinois." Now, Steve did not end up doing that, but that was the plan at that moment. And he said, "We'd like for you to come and be our associate director of bands and director of athletic bands." And I said, "Well, there's a problem, Harry. I don't have a master's degree." And he said, "We know that. We'll let you get your master's here, and you'll be a professor on the faculty and a student all at the same time. And we'll pay for the master's degree."
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those offers like just your head spinning, because it's a phone call out of the blue. And so I said, "Well, I can't, because I've already committed to Frank at LSU, and I've already been to Baton Rouge, and I've got my apartment, and I've turned on the power and the water and the cable and got my phone, et cetera." He said, "Well, will you do me a favor?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, "If you'll just call Frank for me, we're friends, and just tell him what I've just said to you." And I said, "Sure, I'd be happy to do that. That's a professional courtesy that I'm happy to extend." So I got off the phone with Harry, and I right away called Frank, and I said, "Frank, I've committed to LSU. I'm yours. But Harry Clark asked me to call and tell you about a conversation we just had together." So I gave him that conversation. And, of course, it was probably 5 to 10 seconds of silence. It felt like an hour. And Frank says to me, "Well, Dale, what is it you're coming to LSU for?" And I said, "Well, to study with you, of course." He said, "No, I mean, what do you want to do when you get your degree?" I said, "Well, I've enjoyed this high school thing, but I think I might like to become a college band director." And he said, "I think you are one. Take the job."
Wow.
Yep. And so I didn't go to LSU, and I went to Kentucky instead. And, obviously that was the right choice at that time. I have always regretted not getting to study with Frank. But the flip side of that is I did get to study with Harry and the great faculty there at UK. So it's I got to start teaching college at a very young age. So that was good for me.
Well, absolutely. And what's interesting about the story, one, is everybody is so incredibly generous, which I find all the time, but it's nice to always be reminded, everyone's looking out for your best interest. And so that was really lovely. And then number two, that must have been one heck of a Lincolnshire posy.
Well, we did get straight ones, thank goodness, and the students overcame their leadership extremely well that day. But we opened with Savannah River Holiday, if I'm not mistaken, and we played this year, and then we closed with Barnum and Bailey's Favorites. And so the band was pretty hot that day. And, you know, it was just one of those kind of magical deals. And, you know, Frank liked it, and he was looking for a GA, had a spot, and he offered it to me. So I was extremely grateful, and he's been a great friend ever since and a mentor for sure. And I've asked him a million questions over these past three decades. I assure you of that.
Well, so is one of the paths from high school director to college that you are really excelling with your high school group and the teaching you're doing, and people come find you?
I think that's a path. I don't think it's maybe the path that most folks take. But it's certainly a path, because you're going to get noticed if you're doing excellent work at the public school level. There's no question about that. And folks will come after you. They're smart to do that. Most folks, you know, they decide, you know, teaching that age group is not for me, or I don't want to do the marching band, or I don't want to have to deal with the parents, or I don't want those kind of hours, on and on it goes. And they say, after my master's, I'll go ahead and get my doctorate, I'll get a DMA in conducting, or I'll get a PhD in music ed or whatever, and then I'll go be a college teacher. And I think that's the more prominent path, certainly today. I mean, you know, for me, we're talking back in the mid-80s, so it's changed dramatically.
Right. So there are a lot of people that are like, I enjoy the teaching, but everybody will admit how hard the band director job is at high school.
And it's next to impossible. I mean, with the number of hats that you have to wear and the 80 hour work weeks, and you know, all the hoo-ha you have to put up with to get to the real joy, which is the music making.
Right. And of course, I'm always thrilled when someone does stay at that level because they love it. They love what they're doing. They love the kids, et cetera. But our topic was how to make the transition from high school director to college. So if somebody's out there thinking, I'm really one of those guys who I'm enjoying teaching, but I think I do want to be at the college level. So let's say, what would you tell them?
Well, that's a, you know, complex question, obviously. I would say, if you love teaching public school, I did, by the way. I'm one of those rare guys, I think I'm rare, in the fact that I could have done my entire career in the public school and have been as happy as a clam. I love that age group as much as I love the college kids, and I love doing that job. But what did it for me, you know, I thought about this a while. It's not like I took that UK offer, you know, instantly. I mean, I had to really sit and think about it. It was, where am I going to have the most impact over my career? If I stay in the profession 30 to 40 years, I mean, I've been in 37 and a half now, so hopefully 40s in my future, and then maybe 50, but it's where am I going to have the most impact? Well, even at North Hardin, where I'm graduating a pretty good-sized senior class, let's say only five of those guys go on to be in a music major each senior class. And let's say of those five, maybe two graduate from music with a music degree and end up teaching. Whereas at the collegiate level, I'm teaching, you know, a bunch of folks every day that are going to end up in the public schools as a music teacher. And so my influence, if you will, my spread is much more, it's a much wider net that we cast when we teach at the university level. If you really want to influence the profession, it's really exponential from high school compared to college. So the first thing is, if you really want to have an impact and a far reach on what we do, then teaching at the collegiate level makes a lot of sense. The other things, I guess, I probably should answer that question, Tim, by just saying, here are the things that really jolted me into, man, I'm not in Oz anymore. I'm not in Kansas anymore. You know,
okay.
The jolt that those first couple of semesters becoming a college teacher and then past that are a high school freshman and a college freshman, not the same animal any way, shape or form, just like a high school senior is not a college senior or certainly a graduate student. So the maturity of the kid, which means your pacing has to be so much faster at the collegiate level because they're so much smarter and they're so much more talented and they're probably more eager, more into it, you know, giving more effort at the collegiate level because, you know, it's their futures. So, you know, at high school, if it's not going well and you say, hey, clarinets, we really need to get together and, you know, work out these passages. Can we meet after school at, you know, 3:30 on Thursday? Well, college level, that doesn't happen. You have your amount of time you have in your class and you're done. You don't get it done in that amount of time, too bad. So the pacing, the time management, you've got to select the rep, and boy, you better know the rep. For me, that's probably the biggest learning curve is at high school. You know, you play a couple of concerts in the fall and two or three concerts in the spring. And one of them is your festival or assessment or contest, whatever you call it, where you live. And so you're working on those three tunes a lot. But at college, you know, if you play two to three concerts a semester, and it's got to be significant rep, obviously, and you are probably going to have more than one band. Like here, we've got four. So there's, you know, you've got rep for four different ensembles for multiple concerts a semester. And if you don't know the rep, you are absolutely toast. And so the thing I crammed the most for that first couple of semesters was learning the repertoire. And for me, you know, that's our curriculum. That's everything. And of course, you got to wear many hats at the collegiate level too. We don't have parents to deal with at this level, per se, but we do have administration that's a very different kind of an animal than the public school teacher has. And so you have to learn how the politics work and the chain of command and, you know, how you please whom and et cetera, et cetera. So those are kind of the big, I guess, differences between teaching at a high school situation and at a university situation.
So you would say that at least a young college director spends a lot of time preparing to know the music he has to teach, he or she has to teach, because it happens so much faster.
That's correct. The thing that I, you know, a high school teacher, we're pedagogues at that level. And when I say that, I don't just mean the actual definition of the art or the craft of teaching. In music, we think of a pedagogue as somebody who teaches concepts or fundamentals or the basic building blocks of music. Well, at the university level, that's already done for you. So instead of you talking a lot about posture and hand position and air and articulation on and on, you're talking about the music. It's all about the music. You know, it's not about fundamentals, because that's already in place. And plus you'll hurt the kid's private lesson teacher, you know, their applied teacher, if you start talking a lot about, you know, I don't like your embouchure or whatever. So, you know, it's all about the music. And so you not only is it a lot faster pace, but it's a lot different kind of information. And you really don't talk at college. You really conduct. You know, in public school, there's a lot more verbal instruction, where in college, it's almost a silent rehearsal, except for measure numbers. And you're expected to show everything you want the ensemble to do rather than tell them. And that's a big learning curve for a lot of folks. It was for me.
Wow. Right. Absolutely. So then does that mean that you would recommend that someone that wants to be a college director should be studying their conducting and their repertoire more than some other things?
Absolutely. If you don't know the rep, you're absolutely toast. And if you don't know how to conduct that rep, then you're absolutely toast, because the college students, if you waste their time, they are upset, and rightfully so. They should be. Not that the high school student shouldn't be also, but I think the high school student has a little bit more patience, and you're teaching them basically everything they need to know in public school, from beginning band to middle school to junior high to high school. I mean, if you want them to be able to do something, you have to train them. Whereas when you get them in college, they were all in all state. You know, they're all the best players from their schools, from their states. And so you are working with a completely different animal at the collegiate level in terms of their maturity and preparation. And again, their whole desire for musical excellence and artistry.
That is really interesting, because this is not what I thought you were going to say.
I think I was going to say.
Well, I don't know, actually. But I think this is really, really interesting, because So would you recommend that someone that wants to be at the college level, they should, of course, work on getting their master's degree and or doctorate, et cetera? That should be part of their plan, clearly.
I'm one of the last guys. I'm a dinosaur, and I don't tell Jerry Junkin or Gene Corporon or any of those guys that don't have their doctorate that I called them a dinosaur. You know, keep that our secret. But I'm one of the last guys to work at this level without a doctorate. And so everybody now is going to have it. And more than likely, it needs to be a DMA in conducting, not so much the PhD in music ed track, because of what we're just talking about. And that's how most guys get into it. Now, a lot of guys get into the college profession via athletic bands, because, you know, that takes a special critter. That's a special personality. That's somebody that wants to do the college marching band thing, or they want to do the college men or women's basketball band, or the volleyball band, or the, you know, the baseball band, the swimming band, whatever it is. And, you know, that's a completely different animal than what you have been doing at public school, pretty much. So there's no competitiveness in terms of college bands having a Saturday show like where we were together on Saturday. And, you know, you have to be a musician above everything else. Now, the college teachers wear many hats, yeah. And to get in the door at a lot of these liberal arts schools, you're going to not just conduct the band. You're going to maybe be an applied teacher. Maybe you're going to teach music ed. Maybe you're going to teach theory. Maybe you're going to teach music history, et cetera, et cetera. You may need to do a lot of things at a small school and then, you know, build your chops up. And then, of course, we don't get promoted unless we change jobs. That's how it works in our world. And so, you know, if you're going to get promoted, you're going to move.
Okay. Now, wait, let me ask this question, because I always was under the impression that a lot of aspiring college directors move into these sort of athletic band jobs as a way to move into the college world and then maybe move forward into the kind of conducting job you were discussing.
That happens, but rarely do you stay at the same institution. For me, I did. You know, I did. When I came, I mean, one of the reasons to leave Kentucky and come to Arkansas was the person that I was behind at Kentucky was only about 10 years older. So did I really want to wait till that person retired to move into the non-athletic band track, if you will?
Right.
And I really didn't. But the person here was getting ready to retire. And the reason for this hire was to kind of groom the person to at least have a shot at that job. Of course, you know, there's nothing that's guaranteed. You still have to do your national search legally. But a lot of people will, you know, go and do a great job with the athletic bands. They'll get noticed, and then they'll be in the candidate pool for other jobs. Now, if you move up within that university, then fantastic. You don't have to sell your house, all that. But rarely does that happen that way. Most always, you're going to move up by changing institutions.
So am I right that my impression is that you would start at that sort of athletic band level and then try to transfer up, or do people just move right into the other job?
Yes to both. I mean, that's why I brought up the liberal arts school. It's smaller. You know, it's not a commuter campus. They all live on campus. You know, they're all taking the big core, and they're giving most of their degrees in the arts and the humanities and the sciences. So, you know, you have a much smaller professor to student ratio in those schools, and then you can do a good job there, and then a bigger school will notice you, and obviously you've got a good resume, and you've got good video, and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, either way works, and they do work that way every year when jobs come available.
Okay, wow, this is very interesting.
Well, I mean, that's really kind of the path. That's your trajectory. You can come in from the athletic band door. You can come in from, hey, I just got my DMA from Mallory Thompson at Northwestern, or, you know, pick anybody you want to pick who's really outstanding at training folks. And, you know, because of your pedigree, you look really good on paper. And then you come in, you knock out your interview and your audition. And then they go, hey, this is a young cat we can keep for, you know, 25, 30 years. Let's give him a shot.
Okay. So we talked about the typical need these days to get your doctorate. Would you tell people to go study and do that and then try to move into college? Or are there people like yourself who can get that college athletic job or whatever and continue to be working on their degree? Like, where does it, is there a suggestion there?
There is for me. Now, this would not be the answer you'd get from a lot of different people, but I'm not a fan of going straight through. I tell our undergrads here, and I've been consistent during my entire career at Arkansas. I say, I think it's a mistake to get your master's right after your undergrad. I think you need to go out there and figure out what you don't know and what you're not good at. And then when you come back, you'll be really focused on shoring up those weaknesses and filling in those knowledge gaps, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel the same way about the master's and the doctorate. I think you ought to get out there and see what you're made out of. And then when you come back to get that third degree, again, you'll be asking the right questions, and you'll be going after the right information, the right curriculum, et cetera. Now, like I said, nobody's going to work higher ed without the doctorate, at least not for long. And, you know, my wife and I made a decision back during that time. Do we want to do the family or do I want to do the degree? And obviously we chose the family, and I wouldn't go back and change that decision now. Do I wish I had the doctorate? You bet. Of course. Absolutely. But at the same time, it just didn't work for us at that point in my career. So if you don't have the terminal degree now, you're probably not going to work in higher ed very long.
All right. And I have to tell you, I would agree with the sort of basic concept of not going straight through as well, because I agree with you. I think you get out there and you're standing in front of a bunch of high school kids, and you do really quickly figure out what you don't know.
Well, you know, let's just talk about the interview. You've got a video conducting the Texas Wind Ensemble, or you've got a video of you conducting the high school band that you trained to play this repertoire. Which do you think is going to impress the committee the most? Well, they know the Texas Wind Ensemble can play anything you put in front of them. It doesn't matter who's conducting them. You know, so is that really that big a deal? Or did you do more great work by training this high school band to play a great piece of music? So for me, it's really all about, you know, putting yourself in the best spot in the interview and to be better than your competition, because you've got some experience out there and you can actually show that. I tell everybody that I got the Arkansas job because my high school band's Lincolnshire Posey performance, because that's what I sent in as my demonstration, that concert that impressed Frank Wicks. And, you know, we've got a Granger scholar here on faculty, happened to be the chair of the department at that time. And they go, this guy, you know, this 20 something year old could teach, you know, this piece to a bunch of teenagers and then play it like that. Yeah, we ought to look at him. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Well, right. And what's interesting about this conversation we're having, Dale, is this is really the same advice in everything. You know what I mean? Like, if drill writers ask me this, music arrangers ask me this, I would give them these same answers.
Well, I'm in business. I mean, it really is cross profession.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, experience is, you know, and this could come out to sound kind of, you know, sacrilegious, but for me, excellent experience trumps education when it comes to, can this person get the job done?
Right. And what you said, you build your reputation. People see the good work you're doing. This is what I would tell somebody that wants to be a drill writer, is like, write some good drills, have some groups be successful, and then people will start coming to find you. Or if you're an arranger, like, you have to show that you know what you're doing, and then people will seek you out ultimately. And so I see that you're giving the same advice here. I like that that's sort of across all genres of the music world makes sense, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, bottom line is, are you going to give your students who are under your charge and you've been given responsibility to give them the best experience you possibly can? Who's going to do the best job of that? And, you know, experience and a track record, you know, speaks volumes. So let's say you didn't graduate from all the most prestigious universities in America, but you graduated from good schools with great grades and you have produced at whatever level you are. Well, for me, that's the kind of person I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say it's produced.
Well, right. And also, I think it helps remind people not to look past where they are, because I think sometimes people are like so busy to try to get to that great top 12 drum corps or that, you know, BOA band, whatever, that they sometimes might overlook the kids standing in front of them. But you've got to prove with those kids that are obviously your main, you know, it's where you really should be giving your attention. You've got to prove it there in order to move to somewhere else if you want to.
Well, when I taught at Bremen and North Hardin, I never thought about the next job. I mean, I'm at Bremen in my second year, and personnel director at Hardin County Schools calls and says, Mike Sims is retiring, and we want you to apply. And I go, well, how'd you know about me? He goes, well, one of your fundraiser guys was a former band director, and he's been in your band room a few times, and he's seen you teach, and he says, you're going to be good. We should look at this guy. You know, that's how it really happens. And at North Hardin, same thing. Harry Clark had judged my band and had been around, and I'd had him come down to work with my band. And, you know, it's do great where you are, and then the next step will kind of take care of itself.
Well, that's fantastic advice. And I just feel like I want to highlight that because, you know, I've been in rehearsals where You know, I don't know, like the guard guy didn't seem to be happy to be there or something. And I'm like, come on, you've got to be so thrilled to have anybody to work with and to prove yourself and to do great work. And of course, you owe that to the kids anyway, but I think this is great. Do great work and then, you know, the rest of it will happen.
It does. I promise that's, I mean, in my experience, that's been 100% true. Just, I mean, and who are you going to work with other than your own kids? I mean, who cares more about them than you do? Right. And just, I get tickled because people say, hey, we'd like you to come do our, you know, All-State band or All-Region band or whatever. But it's the second group. Would you be offended? And I'm going, are they kids? And do they have instruments? And they want to be there. And they go, well, yeah. And I go, then I'm in. You know, I don't care what band it is. I want to go work with kids, you know. So let's go make some music together. You know, give everything you got, be totally invested in whoever the kids are sitting in front of you or standing in front of you. And like I said, don't worry about the next step. It'll happen for you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think having an idea of, you know, as we've been discussing, an idea of maybe what might be expected and some sort of idea of where you might want to go or when you might want to start working on your next part of your degree, which you, of course, can do while you're still teaching, et cetera, et cetera. I love that because that's the exact same advice I give people if they're a first-year teacher and they're really nervous, you know, and they're like, oh, man, I'm, you know.
Well, I say that. That's redundant. I mean, let's face it, you know, first-year teachers, they're not nervous, then they don't have their brain connected.
Well, right, but I give them that same advice you just said, which is just, you know, work your hardest, give them everything you've got, and they will love you, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, great bands show up when great teachers show up, and it doesn't matter where they go.
Yeah.
I mean, just track anybody that's a great teacher, and I don't care what school, I don't care if it's in, you know, the end of the earth America, barely normal high school, on and on it goes. A great band will show up.
Yeah.
They didn't know they needed a great band there, but they got one now. I mean, great teaching is great teaching, no matter who you're working with.
Right. So be a great teacher. Do your best work. Make yourself knowledgeable. Study the rep. Work on your degrees, but not maybe in order. This is all good stuff. Is there anything else before we finish this conversation that you want to mention about this?
Well, you got to work in order, of course. I mean, undergrad, I mean, and of course, since I'm an advisor, and I have been for years, you know, kids are always coming in, what degree should I get? Okay, look, what do you want to do next year? What do you want to do in 5 years? What's your perfect gig in 10 years? Where do you want to be in 25 years? Where would you like to retire? You know, I got to get them thinking long term. And so you go get the degree that's going to allow you to do those things at the highest level of excellence, of success. So get the undergrad degree in the right thing for you for that next step in your life. Then after that next step, then go get the master's degree in the discipline that's going to make it better for you. If it's music ed, great. If it's conducting, great. If it's pedagogy, great, on and on. And then when you go get the doctorate, this is the job I want to finish my career in. So it's all, you know, it's all climbing the stairs, but you got to have definite goals for each of those steps.
Right. And you at least need to have a clear next step.
Oh, absolutely. Now, maybe you'll get a call out of the blue. And, hey, you know, Leonard Bernstein just keeled over in front of the New York Phil back in the day, you know, when all that stuff went down. So you never know when the call is going to come. It's going to change your life in a direction you never considered. But if you've done great work, that's probably why that phone call came.
Right. And you're prepared.
Exactly. Yeah. You never stop preparing. I mean, we're lifelong learners. You know, I'm just as excited, if not more excited today about learning a new piece as I was my first few years of teaching.
Well, that's wonderful. And that's why you're continuing to do such a great job.
Well, that's very kind of you. I don't know how many people would agree with you, but at least, you know, I got one guy that likes what I'm doing, but it's, yeah, I mean, let's face it. I mean, I'm going to say this on this, and I'll probably regret it. But, you know, I go to Sunday school class with 40 people that can't wait to retire from the job that they've hated for the last 40 years. I just can't imagine living life like that. You know, just go stamp out license plates if that's what you want to do. If you don't get up in the morning and you can't wait to get to work, then you're picking the wrong profession. You know, find something that you cannot wait to do, that excites you, that you're passionate about, that your enthusiasm is just bubbling over, and then go do it. You know, I can't believe they pay me to do what I do.
Well,
don't tell them I said that either. That's going to be our secret also. But I mean, you know, that's what I tell every student that walks in my door. Look, what excites you? What gets that dazzle in your eye? What gets you all fired up? What gets goosebumps on your body? What raises a hair up on your neck? That's what you need to go do. As long as it can pay the bills. We do like to eat.
Right. And you're right. And it is unfortunate how many people end up not being able to do that. And so those of us who are musicians that can make our living doing something we love, we are all very fortunate.
And I realize that that's a little bit not realistic what I just said, but I do think you at least got to try. I think you got to give it your best shot.
Well, you know, and I do believe that we have a way of ending up in something we love if we really are trying and we love it. You know, like I do, there's a draw. I do think it works that way, honestly.
Well, I think that's why there's so many old band directors. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I mean, how many retired principals do you personally know? And I don't know any because they're all dead. That's one of my jokes that I tell people. I don't know any retired principals. All of them are dead. But band directors live until they're, you know, a million years old because, you know, they've loved life. They've loved kids. They've loved music. I mean, you know, and we're not teaching a core subject. You know, the only people that walk in our door are the ones that want to be there.
Right.
We're really, really, really fortunate.
Yeah, that's great. Wow. Great stuff, Dale. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. And I think that this is chock full of helpful stuff. And yeah, wow. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me. And your students are very lucky to have you there.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm very lucky to have them as well. And the music community is very lucky to have you, Tim, because what you do with the Marching Rock Roundtable your work is really, really significant and impactful. And you're making a real difference out there. And I don't know how many people, you know, tell you that, but I'm a big fan.
Oh, well, I really appreciate that. You know, I don't hear really too much, little grumblings here or there, but we do think we're trying to make a difference. So I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot to me.
Well, you have the greatest people on. I mean, I'm going to bring the IQ down quite a bit once mine goes up, but I think it's fantastic. You cover such an array of topics and you cover relevant topics, topics that are important. I mean, let's face it. What the public school teacher is facing today is unbelievable. I didn't face anything like they are having to go through today. I didn't have the insane testing and teaching to the test and on it goes. You know, we don't want me to start that conversation. Mm. But, you know, it's a tough road to hoe for these folks.
Well, and as you mentioned, I think the greatest thing about doing the podcast all these years is, you know, it just constantly renews my faith in people because everybody's so generous and willing to share and wants to help. And, you know, like that's just really cool, you know, because you think people, you know, sometimes people think people at the highest level are, you know, holding their secrets and their daggers are out and whatever. And I have not found any of that. Everybody is wonderful and generous and wants everybody to be great. And so, you know, yay band. Like I love it. And I mean, really, it does make me feel great about our activity.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we all, I think, have this, if we're realistic, we have this incredible feeling about paying it forward because none of us get to have any success or even a modicum of success in this business if we don't have a ton of people that have helped us along the way. Like my high school band director who started me in beginning band in fifth grade was my second father. And he was so unselfish with his time and he was so invested in each student and he would just let me hang out and he would let me ask questions, you know, ad nauseum, you know, just pester him to death. And then my college band director was the same way. You know, he invested in us and he gave everything he could and as much time as he could. And you know, and then all the mentors you have along the way and all the people like, you know, I mentioned Frank Wicks and all of us have that same story. And so we know that we can't go back and pay those guys back. So we have to pay it forward to the future generations of the profession. And I'm like you. I've never met anybody that said, no, I can't tell you that. That's my secret.
Right.
Ever. Right. Yeah. I mean, we're having a talk in the van going back from the show from finals. And we're not talking about marching band. We're talking about how to conduct, Lincolnshire Poesy and Gary Markham's talking about how he had to work out the Warriors when he did it with Lowell Graham with the National Concert Band group. And Albert Lowe sitting behind me, and he's talking about, well, how do you do Rufford Park Poachers here, et cetera. And I said, you know how I learned to conduct Lord Melbourne? I'm at North Hardin, and I call Jim Copenhaver at the University of South Carolina, and I said, Dr. Copenhaver, I heard your band play this, and I don't know what I'm doing. Can you help me? And he said, well, I don't see why not. Now, I was not a student of Jim Copenhaver's, ever, not once. And 90 minutes later, and I don't think I'd made another sound, I had every marking, apparently, from his score into my score over the telephone, and I knew how to conduct Ligeture Posey.
Wow.
That's my experience. And I've never called a composer in my entire career and said, hey, could you help me understand what you mean here, that they would not help me ever. I mean, everybody wants to help everybody do the best job they can do.
Well, that's absolutely been my experience. And I think that I'm also trying to encourage young directors and instructors to not be afraid to ask too, you know?
Well, that's, you know, that's a key. I had people in my band room all the time because, you know, 4 sets, 10 sets, 20 sets of ears or eyes are better than mine. And they most of those people had done it longer than me. And I think the reason young teachers don't ask for help is that they're embarrassed that somebody will think they're not very good. They're not doing a good, or their ears are not good, or they bad piece. You got to get rid of that, completely jettison those thoughts, because you ask yourself, will me inviting this person to come to rehearsal or to whatever make me better and make my students better? Well, almost 100% of the time, that answer is absolutely. So you do it.
Right.
Check the ego at the door and just do it. And trust me on this. Every person that I ever brought in to work with my high school kids, I learned way more from the session than my students learn, because you get to step back and hear it from perspective you don't get to. And they're probably saying about the same things you are, but just in a different way. So the student thinks, oh, this guy's profound. Wow. But it's validating what you're doing. And then if it's not validating, you said, oh, I need to rethink that. So guests are invaluable, you know, and there are people all over everybody's communities that are willing to come in and help, you know, even if it's just run a sectional or do a master class, or, you know, they just want to help, just like we're talking about. People want to be involved, and they're not going to ask for you to pay them a bunch of money. You know, they'll just come and help.
Well, and also people at even the very highest level still remember what it was like when they were starting.
Sure. We all had tons and tons and tons of help. And, you know, you should ask for as much as you can possibly get.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't care if you're out in the middle of nowhere, somebody will get in their car and drive out to help you and your kids.
Yeah, there's always help if you can find it, and it's out there if
yep,
you
just gotta
ask
be creative
for it.
Sometimes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's definitely the concept behind the podcast here. And it's also the same concept behind the new marching arts education site I have. There's this video stuff. It's like all about there's help out there and can we get it to people? You know, and so, and you talking with me today and sharing this, your expertise in this way is, you know, it's part of all of that. So I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, I tell my students all the time, we're not locking the library on you. We're not locking the internet on you. Information is out there. All you got to do is go seek it out. Go find it.
Right.
And so if you don't do it, it's not out there. So thanks for putting it out. I mean, I was just, before you call me, I was watching a Leonard Bernstein video on YouTube of one of his Harvard lectures about syntax and music. Well, you know, how many years has he been dead? But he's still teaching me today.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So these things are going to live on indefinitely.
Yeah, that's great.
It's going to teach future generations of music educators. So it's fantastic. Thanks for doing it.
Well, thank you for taking time to talk with me. I've really, really enjoyed this, and you were just wonderful.
Well, thank you, Tim. You got to raise your standards up, buddy.
Thanks, Tim.
You have a great Thanksgiving, my friend.
Thank you.
If you're wanting to move up the career ladder, what you need is knowledge. Make yourself more valuable and knowledgeable by listening to over 700 podcasts available now in our podcast archives at our website at marchingroundtable.com. You can search there by category or just put a word into the search bar. While at the website, sign up for a free VIP membership. Then you'll receive our biweekly newsletter and be notified about upcoming podcast releases and guests. Look for the Marching Roundtable on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Thanks again to the sponsor of this podcast, Box 5 Software, creators of Envision 3D Drill Design Software, found at box5software.com. When you contact the good folks at Box 5, tell them you heard about them on the Marching Roundtable podcast. And we hope you'll support the podcast on our Patreon page, where we have new rewards for anyone pledging at even $2 a month or higher, a special weekly podcast with me, Tim, and John Bogenschutz, who's always hilarious. That special podcast available only to Patreon supporters. Found out more at patreon.com/marchingroundtable. And we also encourage you to continue learning and making yourself more valuable at marchingartseducation.com. Thanks to Dale for joining us on this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. If you're a business that works with band directors, marching bands, color guards, or drum lines, you should consider sponsoring an episode of the Marching Roundtable. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach, and with thousands of podcast downloads each month, it's a great way to directly reach your target audience. For more information, click on the Sponsorship Opportunities link at marchingroundtable.com or email Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. You can grow your business and help support what we're doing here on the podcast. Thanks.